Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast Show. This is episode 57. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt.
What's up, Brian Daniel?
You know what's up. It's spring equinox day.
Is it?
Yeah.
Today is spring equinox. I need a dictionary or something to figure out what that even means.
There's two equinoxes a year. I don't know if that's the right plural of the term, and two solstice of the year. And so this is the actual day.
First day of spring.
Yeah, when the earth does something. Maybe our guest today can help us out on that, because I understand she has a bit of a scientific background.
A little bit more than we do, I think.
A little bit, yeah. And this is, yes, it's the official first day of spring, which really, for me, unofficially, the first day of spring is daylight saving spring forward.
I think the first unofficial day of spring is when the pitchers and catchers report.
Fair enough. I think we both agree maybe that it's not March 21st.
Yeah.
So today we are excited to have Heather Zimpel with us. And Chris, I wanted to say that on my list, that is a running list of the top five most interesting people that I've met, Heather may be on that list. Wouldn't you agree?
I would. Yeah, I would definitely agree.
She is such an interesting kind of mix of things, currently in the D.C. area, hailing from Louisiana, I think. You want to give her a proper intro?
It's actually Alabama.
But Alabama. Well,
somewhere,
I mean,
in the
come
south.
On.
Come
on. SEC football fan, D.C. scientist, small group. Expert author.
You have to remind people every once in a while you're from Kentucky. So
I do it more than is necessary. I'll grant you that.
No, I'm so excited to have Heather. Heather has been a friend for a long time. She's been a huge influence in my life as I've learned how to do small groups and disciple people. And basically, I tell her all the time, but I copy what she does and then put my name on it. And that's kind of the way I do it. But Heather Zimpel leads the discipleship efforts at National Community Church in Washington, D.C., which is one of the coolest churches ever, pastored by Mark Batterson. But she oversees small groups, directs leadership development training, serves on the weekend teaching team. She lives on Capitol Hill, which is so cool. We went there in the summer, and I got to park my car on her driveway. And she's like in the really just a very cool part of town. But she can be found enjoying the adventures of parenting with her husband, Ryan, as they raise Sawyer, their fun-loving and energetic daughter. Heather is the author of Sacred Roads, Community is Messy, and Amazed and Confused. Thanks for being with us, Heather.
Thanks so much for having me. It's awesome being here with you guys. You know, when you use the word like she's interesting, is that like in a bless her heart kind of way?
No, but that does show your southernness that you would even ask that question.
Interesting.
That's your Alabamian coming out that you would even ask that though.
I know, right?
Maybe intriguing. Intriguing.
You should be able to balance an egg.
Fascinating.
On its end today.
Heather has a great personality.
I told you she would know something about the equinox.
<That's>
We were in pre-show and I said, Heather will know what the equinox is.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Let's jump off that a little bit, because you do have a fascinating story, Heather, about how you came to full-time ministry at a church. And I bet it's not like a lot of people. So tell us how you got from a government to discipleship.
Yeah, well, and it goes back even further than government. It was moving from environmental engineering, biological engineering, to government, to ministry. So, you know, very orthodox path. I think I've always been called to be a disciple maker. Like, I knew that was my ultimate calling as a follower of Jesus. I just thought it was going to happen within the context of a marketplace environment. I believed we needed more people that were passionate about making disciples within their sphere of influence. And so my background's in biological engineering. That's what I started doing. It's what got me to D.C. and to government work, because I was doing some work for a senator who was on the Environment Public Works Committee. And then I got tricked into ministry. I don't really know how to say it, but I was part of National Community Church in the early days when it was kind of a church planting phase still. So that means all hands on deck. You do a little bit of everything. Because I was the person that had the most small group experience from my college days and high school days, Pastor Mark asked me if I would step into kind of giving some guidance and direction to that. And then over time, you just start doing more and more things. And eventually it came to a point where I had to decide, look, what am I doing with my life? And I looked at where I went through a whole process of figuring out what am I called to do here? And I tried to look at where I felt most fulfilled. and where I was seeing the most fruit. And I know this doesn't sound very spiritual, but where I was having the most fun, and decided to jump full time into ministry at that point. And haven't looked back. I've loved every minute. Well, not maybe every minute, but I've loved most minutes, and really love that I get to do what I do, where I get to do it, and who I get to do it with.
I also have a background in biology. I dropped it in college. So that's my background.
It's interesting. I think that my background, I view things a little bit differently than I would have if I'd had kind of more of a traditional path in the ministry. It's certainly not the path I would have, you know, marked out for myself. But I think about things in terms of environment and in terms of growth, you know, and the biological environmental side of that has definitely impacted how I view community, discipleship, and how we grow as followers of Jesus.
So Heather, DC is known as an extremely transient community. You and I have had that conversation before, and it was something that it makes sense, but I wasn't aware of that. So given that, how do you disciple people when you know they probably aren't going to be around for more than a couple of years? I mean, how's that approach maybe different from more traditional, but I'm sure it's not uncommon in other areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do believe that a lot of urban centers probably experience that more, that D.C. is not the only place. But D.C. is unique. I mean, the average time that a person spends in D.C. is about 2 years. That's because a lot of people come here for grad school, which is going to be 2 to 3 years. 2 years is about the average life cycle of a Capitol Hill staffer, which is what a lot of our church is made up of. So we tend to look at things in a 2-year cycle. So in some ways, I think the way we approach discipleship is more like we are a missionary developing agency than anything else. We have 2 years, so what do we want people to learn, to do, and experience in those 2 years? And because of that, I mean, it's really exciting. We have NCCers not just all over the United States of America, but literally all across the globe. And our hope is that we have talked about the Bible and theology and relationships and community and all of those things in a way that has helped shape them and form them for whatever work they've been called and destined to do. One of the things that we do twice a year at NCC is a discipleship experience called Freshmen of the City. And it's one of the things we call it's a mid-sized group. So there might be 80 to 100 people that are brand new to DC that become a part of that. And they get to hear, they get a meal, because come on, if you're living in DC, you're an intern, or you're new to DC, like getting a free meal is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And so we feed them, and then they get to hear a talk from somebody on our staff or somebody at our church that's living out their faith in real ways. And then they break into small groups. We give them mentors, people that have been living in the city a little bit longer, that know how to navigate it, that know how to navigate the metro, know how to navigate the grid of transportation, and also know how to navigate their faith. And so our hope is that for people that are new to DC, they go through Freshmen of the City, they get grounded in both relationships and worldview that's going to allow them to develop the character they're going to need to sustain the calling they have while they're here. So it is transient. We tend to look at things within a 2-year cycle. And then what's interesting is we're finding that, you know, for people who stay longer than 2 years, they're usually here for the long haul. So figuring out what does discipleship look like beyond that is a conversation we're also maybe more so having now.
You said the life cycle of a Capitol Hill person is 2 years. It seems like the White House is about 4 months. Is that about right?
Right now,
yeah. Throw that in. Sorry.
It is a very fast moving place. And one thing that's really fascinating. One of the things I love about our church is that we are we have people from both sides of the aisle and everything in between. And so when Paul says that you mourn with those who mourn and you rejoice with those who rejoice, on at least one day every 2 years, we're doing both of those things in the same day with different people in our community. And wow. I love that diversity.
That's fascinating.
So every 2 years, Yeah, that's fast. But I think a transient nature like that, or at least what I would maybe say, you know, if you wanted to apply this more broadly, it could be a sense of urgency that other group ministries could employ. In that environment, Heather, what have you found to be most difficult part of identifying and developing leaders?
Yeah, well, especially, you know, a lot of the churches I came from, you might have a 6 month long or a year long, maybe even a 2 year long ramp up to becoming a leader, whether that's in classes or requirements or expectations that you have to go through. And we've had to really speed up that process, or we wouldn't have any leaders, or not as many leaders as we need. And so we've created a low bar, and that's a challenge in of itself. To make sure that you've got people that are coming into leadership that are ready. One of the things we really wrestle with in D.C. is that D.C. just attracts leaders or people that want to be leaders, people that want to be influential, people that want to be world changers. And so a conversation we actually have a good bit around here is that, you have leadership ability and leadership desires, but you're not spiritually ready to lead. We've had people that have wanted to lead small groups that aren't even really followers of Jesus yet, but they have a drive to lead. And so that's one of the things we have to be particularly aware of and have conversations around. We're constantly having to talk to leaders about leadership isn't a privilege, it's a stewardship. We're looking for people who aren't just culturally Christian and know the right words to say, but have a deep and abiding transformation in their lives. And so identifying those leaders, it requires conversation, it requires proximity. And then as far as developing, we've done a Leadership 101 that is an online, it begins as an online experience. You can do it in about 3 hours, and it gives just the nuts and bolts of leading. What you need to know on your first night. And then we try to use continuing conversations with coaches, with small group directors, with longer tenured leaders to help with things that come up in a group context beyond that. We have started doing a lot more training online. We tend to look at training across three environments. What needs to happen from a platform or within a group rally environment, what needs to happen one-on-one, and what can be accomplished through a resource, whether that's print or digital, and what could be a combination of those two things, and being a lot more intentional about what we're delivering developmentally, how and why. Because it's 2 years is hard to not only, you know, I mean, it's hard to develop a leader within 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, much less somebody that we feel like, oh, we've truly discipled them in 2 years. So we're looking constantly for the right time frame, the right resource, and the right vehicle.
Your online training, Heather, is that mainly kind of follow-up training, ongoing, as-needed training, or do you do some of your initial training hosted online?
So all of our initial training is online. And then a conversation happens after that. And it's interactive. So it's not just a one-way communication of videos they're watching, but we have follow-up questions from those videos that they then write out their answers to. For instance, when we talk about our leadership covenant and the theological framework and the lifestyle requirements that we're kind of expecting for our leaders, we'll ask, hey, what part of this do you have a problem with? Or what part of this is going to be most difficult for you to be accountable to? And that then prompts a discipleship conversation in a one-on-one environment. So it's a initial online and then a one-on-one conversation. And then ongoing training and development is a combination of we have online resources and then coaching conversations and coaching circles. And then 3 times a year, we gather all of our leaders in a kind of more of a rally kind of environment at a leadership summit where our lead pastor will cast some vision. Somebody on our training team will give some training on becoming a leader worth following, navigating conflict, improving your communication, those kind of big picture leadership topics. So that would happen 3 times a year. So it's a combination. And a lot of times then that will be followed up with another online resource or a print resource, digital resource that they can then use to further their development.
That's great. I saw a tweet just the other day from Beth Moore. And in the tweet, she was lamenting the fact that basically in her view, the loss of Sunday school in a lot of churches is taking away an avenue for women leaders, that there are less women leaders being developed in the church because Sunday school is going away. And I would love to hear from you because I think you guys do an amazing job of raising up women leaders. I mean, you're a great example of that. I mean, you were attending the church and you were raised up. So how can churches do it better? How can they be more intentional about identifying women leaders and then kind of releasing them to lead in their church?
Yeah, I love that question. And I want to affirm you guys for having the courage, the guts, the awareness, sensitivity to asking that. And I think even asking that question in and of itself is tremendously affirming. I mean, I think that if more pastors and more leaders in the church could just go to the women in their church and ask that, I think that's step one. You know, there are a lot of theological nuances and differences that that can impact the answer to that question, and that's certainly not my I don't want to get into that today, because I believe that regardless of where you land on those nuances, that there is more room wherever you are for women to have opportunities to lead and to increase those opportunities and maximize them. So along with just asking that question, I think looking at the idea of where women can lead in your church, let them lead. And are they leading? And can you encourage them to lead? And so, I mean, can they lead a missions team? Can they lead a small group? Can they lead a Bible study in kids ministry, on worship team, on the parking team? Wherever it is that a woman can lead, encourage them to lead, encourage them to be a part. I think a second thing I would encourage is give them the platform. Maybe in your context, they can't preach, but can they give announcements? Can they lead worship? Can they pray? Can they commission a missions team that's about to go out? Can they give a testimony? I think anytime you can give a woman a platform, it encourages all the other women in the congregation. Hey, I can do that too. There's a place for me to lead here. I think anytime you can bring them along into the ministry, into the leadership that you're doing. If you're leading a group and you see a woman that might be a potential leader, like ask them to lead with you or have them meet with you before the group so they can see how you process, how you prepare. Bring them to the table, whatever table that is, if it's a decision-making table, an input table, giving them an opportunity to have a voice. And then another one, use women as examples in your sermons. If you're a lead pastor, you're a teaching pastor.
That's so good.
I know as a kid growing up in my Baptist church, like Lottie Moon and Annie Armstrong were heroes to me. And I think the more we can even give little girls, young girls, some of those heroes of the faith, examples that they can emulate, people they can aspire to be, I think that will increase the number of women leaders in the church. So that was probably a lot. Those are just kind of some ideas that I've had, things that people have done for me that I'm trying to do now for others coming behind me.
That's so good, especially just let them lead. Just where they can lead, let them lead and not assume anything. That's really good. Another thing I want to ask you about that you guys do a great job of, and I talk to a lot of churches that are trying to figure this out, and that's that mentoring piece. Kind of that one-on-one, walking along somebody, raising them up that way. And I always see that with you. Every time I'm with you, you have somebody that you're basically mentoring and you're bringing alongside you. So how did you guys build the culture of, and you guys call it protégés, creating protégés and emerging leaders. How did you build that culture at your church where it's just something that you do?
Yeah, and I do think it begins with just being who you are. I think it's dangerous anytime in a church to build a program that isn't first kind of embedded in, ingrained into the hearts of leadership. A long, long time ago, when NCC was barely, 200 people, Pastor Mark would talk about the difference between a hospital and a teaching hospital. That, hospitals care for patients. They do the work of medicine. They're they're doing their job at a teaching hospital is also involved in research and development and raising up the next generation of doctors and nurses and practitioners. And he would relate that to the church. And he would say there are churches and then there are teaching churches. And from day one, he's always wanted NCC to be a teaching church. So I think the DNA and the culture of that started right there, that we realized we don't want to just we're going to be about launching campuses. We're multi-site. That's part of our DNA. But we're not just going to launch campuses. We're not just going to plant churches. We also want to unleash leaders. And that's where Protégé kind of came up. Our Protégé program is a year-long, for lack of a better word, internship. But it's really more than an internship. These guys are not just making coffee and making copies. They are part of our staff team leading at high levels. Leading leaders. We're passing off tremendous projects to them. At the end of the year, we will look back and say, these things would not have happened at NCC without our protégés. Some of them come to us almost with already with seminary backgrounds. Some of them come to us from full-time church staff. And sometimes they're coming because they're in a marketplace job and they want to give ministry a shot. And so they walk alongside us for a year. They have it's a cohort kind of a feel. So they're in with, 6 to 8 other protégés. And once a week, they come together for learning. They might be reading books together, listening to podcasts together, listening to someone teach on some topic of leadership or community or ministry. And then the rest of their week, they're with a department mentor in the trenches, learning as they go how to do ministry. And actually, we're right now accepting applications for our protégé program. So you're thinking, man, it's spring equinox today. This is a time to stand the egg on the end and even maybe think about turning my life upside down. If you would want to be a part of the protégé program at National Community Church, I'd encourage you at protege.theaterchurch.com. Check it out. Consider it. Let us know if you have any questions. And then we also have a program. Program seems like a very sterile word and too formal and official, but we have an environment at NCC called Emerging Leaders. So anyone that's on our full-time staff that's under the age of 30 is invited to hang out with me and Pastor Joshua, who's on our teaching team, once a month to talk about everything from character to communication to conflict to theology to missions. And it's regardless of what their role is. So we've got kids that are part of our administrative team, kids that serve as small group directors, that are part of our missions department, across the spectrum of staff positions come together. And we just give them a place to grow, to learn. Again, it's about developing the character it's going to take to sustain the calling. But it's also extremely valuable for me as a member of our executive leadership team, as someone who's responsible for discipling the next generation, to just hear their perspective has been so valuable. And that was kind of an unintended consequence of forming that environment. I just wanted to give a space for young leaders to grow, but the opportunity to hear their voice and hear their perspective is absolutely invaluable to me as a leader. In decision-making and thinking through where are we taking the church into the next generation.
Millennial question for you, Heather.
I don't know.
None of us do.
Out of all the people I know, I think you probably are most immersed in the millennial experience, I guess, for lack of a better term, at least in the leadership role and just your position there in the D.C. area. I'm of the opinion that by and large, people aren't all that different from generation to generation. I think every generation seems to be a little frustrated by the following generation. And so it's hard for me to conclude that the millennials are really that much different from anybody else. I don't think they're any more overly optimistic than anybody or anything like that, historically speaking in our culture. So I wanted to ask you, I think other things change, technology, for instance, the way we communicate, language, So Bishop, your experience there, what keys, what approaches, what really anything would you have to say about just ministering the millennial generation?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And again, thank you for asking that. And again, like the women leader question, I think the more pastors and leaders can just ask the question, how do we do this better? That in and of itself is, I believe, affirming to that generation. I also want to agree with you that you know, there's probably not that much difference from generation to generation. It's just as we get older, we forget how frustrating we were, or how maybe passionate we were, how maybe stupid we were. There was an article that was written in Time Magazine, and it described the current generation. And as you read it, most people, if they didn't see the timestamp on the article, would assume they're talking about millennials. And I love going to conferences and reading that section of the article, and you just see everybody's head nodding. And I'll ask people, like, does this describe the millennials in your office and your staff, and everybody's hands are going up. And then I love to see the shock on people's faces when I tell them this article was written in 1990 about Generation X.
That's great.
So what you're frustrated about was your own generation. And I think we have to be very careful that we separate out what is a generational issue or a generational distinctive, and what's just a 20-something distinctive. Because I think if we're honest, we realize that what is common of 20-somethings today has been common of 20-somethings in every generation. But with that, I do think that there are some unique cultural and historical movements that have shaped the millennial generation in different and interesting ways. And I think the first step is just understanding their context. I mean, you mentioned already the technology issue. I think along with that, the globalization issues that we see, the instant access. I mean, millennials get dinged all the time for being entitled or wanting promotions right away or wanting to be rewarded immediately. And if we understand their context, well, yeah, this was the generation that had instant access to anything and everything, to their friends, to information. They're the first generation to get a toy in their McDonald's bag. And they're the first generation for getting a trophy for participating. And it's a generation that got to level up on the video game whenever they completed the previous level. And so for them, they have been conditioned to get to level up, to advance, to be rewarded. So in many ways, maybe some of the things that annoy us about the millennial generation, we were actually the ones that culturally conditioned them that way. There's a great book called Sticking Points that if you're looking for some, you know, more information about the millennial generation and the unique cultural and historical context that they grew up in, I would recommend that book. Also, the book, I think it's just, is it just The Millennials by Tom Rainer, that is also amazing at giving context and helping understand why millennials are the way they are. But in terms of keys to discipling them, and I mean, goodness, I wouldn't call these keys. I wouldn't even call these best practices. I might call them things I'm trying right now, and some of them seem to be working. The first thing I would really encourage: don't stereotype.
Also, a
don't
great book title.
What was that?
Also, a great book title.
Yeah, it's true. Very true. You know, don't stereotype. Don't generalize. Don't put them in a box, because they hate that more than anything. Ask good questions. Give them space to doubt. Give them space to ask. I would say bring them into your everyday life. Let them do the things you do as you do them. One conversation I had with a millennial one time was fascinating. They said, you know, I know how to shoot a video, upload a video, and make that video go viral in a matter of moments, but I don't know how to sew a button on my shirt or change the oil in my car. Some of just the life lessons that many of us learned, the only way they know how to do that now is to Google it, because they've lost that connection with the older generation. So I would say just invite them into your life as you live it. Let them run errands with you. Let them be a part of your family life. Incorporate them into the things you do in everyday life. Just like I mentioned with women, I think give them a platform, give them a seat at the table. And I think one of the things you'll discover working with millennials is you'll quickly run into what I kind of call the infuriating paradoxes. And here's what I mean by that. They want depth, but they also want it in sound bites. So they don't want a pat answer. They don't want an easy answer. They don't want a bumper sticker answer. But at the same time, they're a generation that has been so incredibly, shaped by social media and Twitter. So they want it deep, but they want it in 140 words or less. They're wary of authority. They question authority, but they crave mentors. They are the most connected generation that's ever lived. I mean, they are connected with the touch of a finger with every relationship they have, and yet they're the most lonely generation that has ever existed. They're very justice-oriented, but they're compassion fatigued. So I think understanding this paradoxical world that they live in and that they are, but also not making that be a problem, but be something that is actually a gift to us and a place where we can disciple. So I found, just for me personally, maybe I'm rambling a little bit, but to end here, I found that my front porch is the most influential place I have in my ministry. The conversations that happen there, the questions that are asked there, are far more impactful than anything I communicate on a platform. And so I would say just invite millennials into your life as you live it, and help point out the fingerprints of God in their lives as you go.
Thanks, Heather. That was really good. As you're talking about the gaming industry, it reminded me that they're also the first generation to which games really don't end. You ever thought about that?
That's interesting.
Right. No. Absolutely. Yeah.
Because, you know, when we were growing up, you put a quarter in, you get three shots.
Yeah.
And if you're
right.
not good enough, it's over. And your quarter's gone. And enough of those quarters, it's like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Right.
And I remember the first time when we were playing, you know, gaming, it's like, what do you mean? You just keep going. It just regenerates. You just keep going. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
Heather, thank you for being with us.
All of those things impact how they view the world.
Absolutely. That's going to wrap it up for episode 57. Heather, thank you so much for being a repeat guest on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Love hanging out with you guys.
And if you want to follow Heather on Twitter, that is at Heather Zempel, that's Z-E-M-P-E-L. And check out those books. Sacred Roads is one, Community is Messy, and her most recent one, which is also a great title, Amazed and Confused. And I guess the forthcoming Things That I'm Trying, and some of them seem to be working okay, coming in 2021.
I've already stolen that, and I pitched it during the interview, so...
Chris got busy writing that proposal.
Yeah.
We'd also like to thank Chris for being our engineer and also editor. And Heather, thank you so much again. Look forward to seeing you this summer. And look
Thanks
forward to,
so much.
And look forward to being with you guys again for episode 58.